It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on Newstalk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This is the Sandler Training Hour. In this program, we introduce you to Sandler trainers and experts worldwide. I'm honored today to have with me a friend and a trainer, Brad McDonald. Brad's been with the Sandler family for 12, 15 years as a trainer, and he's now one of our coaches. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you, Jim, and thanks for having me on.
Give our listeners the overview of how did you get involved in Sandler and how did you move from owning your own franchise to working with our home office?
Well, I suppose everybody thinks their path was unique, and it probably was. What was maybe a little bit different about mine is I have primarily a military background before I came into Sandler. I'm from a Navy family. I was the son of a naval officer, and I was a submarine officer for 20 years in the U.S. Navy. So when I got out of the Navy, I was trying to figure out, like most guys, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I went into a sales job. I was a financial advisor selling insurance and investment products. And about a year into that process, a gentleman called me up. It wasn't quite a cold call, but it was almost. He had worked with somebody else in our company and introduced himself as a sales coach. I couldn't even fathom really what a sales coach was.
Right.
But in a very short phone call, he had me intrigued, and we scheduled a second call. And in that call, I made a decision to pay him what seemed like a lot of money for a 30-minute phone call once a week. And I had some skeptical people around me who said, you're probably throwing your money away.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of the smartest things I did in my early sales career,
wow.
Jim. He started to introduce me to the Sandler selling system, which I had never heard of. And that process was maybe just a little bit short of miraculous. It was very transformational for me in the selling process. I found that it made myself and my clients a lot more at ease, a lot more straightforward with each other, sold more, but more importantly, everybody was more comfortable. So after working with that gentleman, who still is a sales coach, for some period of time and referring a lot of people to him who signed up with him, I decided I didn't want to stick with the financial planner, financial advisor arena. I didn't quite have the passion for it
right.
After a couple of years, but I really loved what that guy did for me.
Right.
And he said, well, if you're going to leave the financial world, why don't you think about opening a Sandler franchise?
Huh.
And I said, what's that? Started an office just like you have an office in Boise, Idaho. I started one in Norfolk, Virginia.
I think it's really interesting that you're a submarine captain. Some of the listeners may not be aware, but one of the things we're trademarked and famous for is the Sandler submarine, which is the seven stages of the development of a sales relationship, and it's indicated by the segments of a submarine. So what's the parallels that you found in being a submarine captain and having a selling system that's identified by a submarine?
I know you're very attached to your family relationships and legacy and history, and so am I. And when I was 8, 9 years old, my father was a commanding officer of a submarine. We lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I quite idolized my father and his position as a submarine captain. I thought every boy should have a father that was a submarine captain. And he would take me on the ship once in a while when it was in port and let me hang out with them, which was quite thrilling. And one Saturday morning, we went down to the ship, and we actually got underway. The submarine drove down the Cooper River in Charleston, and I was sitting on the bridge of this World War II vintage submarine in the captain's chair, and my dad was on the bridge with me. He was giving orders to the line handlers as we left the pier, and then giving orders to the helmsman and so on, heading down the river, and the stewards were bringing me chocolate milk and donuts, treating me like a king.
Wow.
And as I looked at my dad and ate my chocolate milk and donuts, I thought, man, this is a pretty good life. I'd like to do this one day. My joke with my father, when I took command 30 years later of a submarine at the same pier in Charleston where his submarine
wow.
had been, said, I still don't have my chocolate milk and donuts, Dad, but I'm happy to follow in your footsteps. I don't know that being a submarine officer made me a better salesperson or any better at the Sandler submarine, but it certainly keyed in some parallels between my life in submarines and the Sandler process. When a submarine is in combat, and I don't want to create a negative analogy that sales is like combat, it's not. But when a submarine is in combat, it more than any other ship focuses on one person, and that is the commanding officer. He has to be able to respond to numerous people, the people in the engine room, people in the sonar room, torpedo room, the helmsman, the stern planesman, the chief of the wall, all kinds of people. He has to have a lot of things going on at one time. In the Navy, we want that commanding officer to be so familiar with his submarine that he doesn't even have to think about what's going on inside the submarine. He can focus on the target. That's where his energy needs to be. So everything inside a submarine needs to be just second nature. Well, he gets that by having a lot of experience, and I was on 4 different submarines before I became a commanding officer of my 5th submarine. Parallel, I think, in Sandler is that the Sandler submarine, by giving us a systematic approach to selling, Jim, it allows us to become very familiar with a process. So instead of always wondering what should I do next or what should I say next, we can focus on our prospect, really engage them at a deeper level on their concerns, their problems, their issues, and not be thinking about ourselves or a sales process. So in other words, the submarine second nature, so I can focus on my prospect. I think that's my best parallel.
So how long did it take to go from an enlisted man to a captain?
When I finished high school, I entered the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. My dad enlisted in the Navy in World War II, and at the end of the war, he was sent to the Naval Academy. He said he didn't even know what the Naval Academy was, so he graduated in 1949. Many years later, he swore me in on the same spot.
Wow.
Where he was sworn in. So I went through 4 years at the Naval Academy, graduated, and then entered submarine training, and was on a submarine as a junior officer for 3.5 years, another submarine as a department head. I was the engineer officer, and then I was on another submarine as the navigation and operations officer. I was on a 4th submarine as the number 2, the executive officer, and then the 5th submarine as captain. So it took about, from the time I left the Naval Academy, just under 17 years until I was a commanding officer. It's funny, submarining is a young person's game, probably one of the most complicated platform man has ever created in the world, but it's operated by 120 people, average age 22 to 24 years old. So another parallel is on submarines is that we rely on procedures to do things. We don't do things by the seat of our pants. And I think that's a parallel in Sandler, is having a procedure for how you sell.
Yeah, and I think the other parallel, that what we preach in Sandler is ongoing reinforcement. And people think, okay, I went to a seminar, now I've taken Sandler, and it just doesn't work that way. Just like the trajectory to become a captain is 15, 20 years of training in every position. To become a master salesperson, you've got to be able to think every position and not be caught up in the emotion of the sales call. And we call it being a third person outside of the call, observing what's happening and managing the relationships from that perspective.
Great. And as you said that, I thought to myself, yeah, that's sort of the job of a submarine captain. I gave the analogy when he's in combat, he's in the control room, and his submarine needs to be second nature, but in a sense, he also needs to be a somewhat disinterested third party, as you said, who can see what's going on in his own ship and focus on sonar on the target at the same time. And yes, not get emotionally involved, because it does get pretty tense down there at times. And I developed some of my own leadership principles as I was going through the Navy, and I had 7 principles that I wrote down and attempted to live up to on a daily basis, read them every day. And the number one principle was be approachable and in control of yourself. If you can't control yourself, how will your crew believe you can control the ship? Can you see a parallel there between that and not getting emotionally involved, what you said?
If I am able to control myself, I can almost put myself in that autopilot where I'm able to manage me without getting emotionally involved in what's happening outside of me. And as soon as you get emotionally hooked in anything, you lose your ability to think in a cognitive and positive way. You lose your objectivity.
Yeah, submariners who spend a lot of time, like any career guy, get very attached to the crew, the ship, and things like that, the high standards. And I saw a lot of submarine officers blow their gasket on a regular basis and get emotional and loud and things like that. And I really didn't know much about sales then or getting emotionally involved, but I did know that when people stayed calm, when the leaders stayed calm in tense situations, the crew responded better. And so that's one thing I worked on myself, was always remaining calm in difficult situations.
That's
and I think
awesome.
That applies in sales. You and I know sales can be an emotional roller coaster. Being
yes,
an entrepreneur or a small business owner can be an emotional roller coaster.
Well, we're going to talk today about establishing your leadership compass. So when we come back for the next segment, I'm going to ask Brad to introduce this concept to us, take us through some of those leadership principles that he has come to live by and that apply so well in your sales world. Thank you so much, Brad, for your service and your dad's service. I think that's a terrific story. Really appreciate you sharing that. Share with our listeners your contact information in case somebody out there would like to reach out and connect with you.
Easy to email me at McDonald, that's McDonald, just like Ronald, McDonald at Sandler.com. McDonald at sandler.com.
Awesome. And I'm Jim Stevens, the host of the Sandler Training Hour. We're going to be back after this break for more of Brad McDonald. You can reach us at area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Income would be definitely by far the most tangible results. I have quadrupled the monthly that I've been doing for the company. When I started, that amount has quadrupled. In turn, I have more than doubled my income. Pretty drastic results, I would say.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome to Behind the Business. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This segment of our program, we interview local, regional, in this case, national businesses to hear a little bit more about their story. My guest today is Michael McDougall. Michael is a client of ours in Sandler Training. He's a Canadian Kiwi, right? New Zealand, lives in New Zealand, Canadian, visiting Idaho. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Jim.
So talk to us a little bit, big picture, about Tower Power.
Well, Tower Power is a service company that applies protective coatings to utility structures, both towers and substations, to minimize and mitigate corrosion and rust.
And really what you're doing is you're extending the life of this steel through coatings?
We certainly are.
What drew you towards this industry, and give us your take on how the business is doing?
That's a great question. I can only hope that I have a great answer. I moved to New Zealand some 10 years ago and have family there now. In the process of that, partnered with a team of successful protective coatings enthusiasts and entrepreneurs. We identified a problem, ongoing problem, with the National Grid and towers there, where they had established a program to paint these towers, and we were asked to get involved with this, which we did.
You said earlier in Entrepreneur Radio, you chase good weather. Talk to us about those cycles.
Well, it's exciting. You know, New Zealand's winter is exactly the opposite of what it would be up in Canada or here in the States. So we're able to work efficiently, I might add, for about 6 months of the year, maybe a little bit more in New Zealand, and come back up to Canada here and do the same thing for about 5 or 6 months. So in theory, we're chasing good weather.
And you've got your crew of, what, 50, 60 employees, that some of whom are willing to travel to do their work?
We've got some really fantastic guys, and that's really what makes up Tower Power and gives us the ability to do what we do. Some are Canadians, some New Zealanders. We were able to bring these guys from New Zealand into Canada, give them some exposure. I got to tell you, there's nothing more enjoyable than watching a guy who's never been out of their own country come to a new country and see the looks on their faces. Wow. And look at those big trucks and those big houses and the big roads. It's fantastic. It's a really good experience.
We'll give you contact information, Mike, in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Sure, Jim. Yeah, you can reach me on phone at 604-454-4683, or take a look at our website at www.towerpowergroup.com.
TowerPowerGroup.com. Great. We'll be back with another installment of Mike and Behind the Business just after this.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Sandler's really expensive. Share your response to that.
The small investment that I made into Sandler Training has more than paid off tenfold on a monthly basis. I mean, I've made more in a month from the Sandler Training than I have in previous years. It's an investment in yourself.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. We're talking with Brad McDonald, who is a former submarine captain, a Sandler coach and trainer for 15, 20 years. And he's been telling us some of the parallels between the training he received to become a submarine captain and the application of the leadership principles that he learned during that journey and in his years as a captain. One of the things we talked about is establishing a leadership compass, and I think, Brad, a compass is not going to work unless you have the command policy to help you understand why you're going the direction you're going and what you're doing to get there.
All right, thank you. The first time I was exposed to a command policy was when I was a 22-year-old, fresh out of the Naval Academy ensign, and I drove across country after graduation to my first assignment, which was a submarine in San Diego, and the captain also coincidentally named McDonald, Jack McDonald. We called him Mad Dog. And one thing Mad Dog did when he, and believe me, I didn't call him Mad Dog to his face, when he had me in his stateroom to welcome me on board, is he handed me a copy of what was called his command policy. And he said, read this. So I took it off and read it, and everybody got a copy. So one thing I remember from that command policy was he said in there, my temper ranges between Irish and unreasonable. And as a 22-year-old, I really didn't know what that meant. But I found out pretty quickly when I made a mistake on placing lines from the tugboat on cleat topside on the submarine as we were pulling into San Diego after the first time I was at sea on the ship. And it caused a little bit of damage, and Captain Mad Dog Jack McDonald came down off of the bridge of the submarine. It was in my face and yelled at me at the top of his lungs for a while. I thought my naval career might be over. That's when I realized, oh, that's why he told me in his command policy, my temper ranges between Irish and unreasonable. And I thought, I didn't like being yelled at, but at least he warned me. So that was my first introduction to a command policy. Many commanding officers in the Navy write this thing called a command policy, and when I got out of the Navy, I thought, gee whiz, why wouldn't you have a command policy if you are a leader in a business organization? I thought I would share just a little bit of my command policy, and it's not long. I mean, it's a page and a quarter document. When a commanding officer writes his command policy, he can write anything he wants. There's no specific guidance in the Navy how to write it. But I broke mine down into five areas. One is mission, two is safety, three was integrity and professionalism, and four is core values. And then there's a closing paragraph just telling the men on the ship how I feel about working with them. If you don't mind, I'll ask you if you see any parallels between that
sure.
and the business world.
No,
okay?
I think that'd be awesome. In fact, the parallel I see already is it's a standard upfront contract. In Sandler, we talk a lot about let's establish the agenda or the rules of engagement up front, and what a perfect example.
I like that. So the name of the ship I was captain of was USS L. Mendel Rivers, named after a very military-friendly congressman from Charleston, South Carolina. He was served in Congress from 1940 to 1970, and then later on, after he passed away, a submarine was named after him. So the first paragraph is titled Mission. The primary mission of Rivers is to be ready for war. As the saying goes, in wartime we get paid for tonnage, but in peacetime our paycheck is for readiness and training. On Rivers, our two main pursuits will be training and maintenance. It is our job to train ourselves and maintain our ship so that Rivers is ready to engage in combat operations anywhere in the world on a moment's notice.
Interesting that it really says clearly what is going to be expected of you. What is it they say, Brad? Forewarned is forearmed?
Right.
I think having that as a fundamental understanding of why we're here and what is going to be expected of you really helps, I guess you'd say, set the rudder for your career.
Second paragraph's titled Safety. No mission is successful unless we bring Rivers and every man safely home. Safety of ship, personnel and equipment is always paramount. There are inherent risks in being a seagoing sailor. During war, we might go in harm's way to accomplish our mission, and in peacetime, there may be situations that require us to assume unusual risks. But normally, everything we do aboard Rivers will be done with safety as the number one consideration.
I think that would give all of the people you manage a sense of security, and I know I would feel comfortable knowing that my commanding officer is interested in not only my safety, but the safety of the ship.
Here's the third paragraph, integrity and professionalism. Your worth to this ship and your shipmates is based on two vital traits, integrity and professionalism. If you are an honest man, always putting forth your best effort for yourself and your shipmates, you will succeed aboard Rivers. Remember, you only have your integrity once aboard any ship. Treasure it and guard it. Avoid the short-term gain of dishonesty and enjoy the long-term satisfaction of being known as a man of your word. John Paul Jones said, men mean more than guns in the rating of a ship. The United States citizens have entrusted us with the best ship, equipment, and guns that money can buy. It is our job to be professional sailors, the kind of men that John Paul Jones would have wanted to lead into combat. A positive attitude, a sharp appearance, a physically fit body, and an enthusiastic approach to your own qualifications, training, maintenance, and ship's operations are all marks of our professionalism. These qualities will form our reputations as individuals and collectively as the Rivers team.
I think that really is a great summary of the core values that you stand for and the core values that you expect in the ship. And once you make that clear, a core value becomes something that we can judge ourselves by, our performance by, and our collective group by. So having that clearly defined and understood, now if I see a deviation from that core value, I can start asking questions to get back into alignment.
I appreciate that, because that was a good lead into the next paragraph, which is titled Core Values. My feelings regarding Navy core values, working relationships, equal opportunity, and our treatment of each other are easily summarized in a sentence. I believe the true gentleman, the true leader, the sailor I want you to be, is the man whose conduct proceeds from goodwill and an acute sense of propriety, and whose self-control is equal to all emergencies, who does not make the poor man conscious of his poverty, the obscure man of his obscurity, or any man of his inferiority, who is himself humbled when necessity compels him to humble another, who does not flatter wealth, cringe before his seniors, or boast of his own rank, status, or achievement, whose deed follows his words, and who thinks of the rights and feelings of others before his own, a man with whom honor is sacred and virtue safe. That's quite a bit to ask of any person, but I expect it of you, and you should expect it from me. I just finished it up by saying, I feel extremely privileged to be Commanding Officer Rivers. I'm proud to serve with you and the entire Rivers crew. After 17 years in submarines, I know that a man doesn't get a set of dolphins without a lot of hard work, sweat, and long hours. Dolphins, that's the insignia that a submariner wears after he completes his qualification. You should be equally proud of your ship and the important job that you do aboard her, from the most junior seaman to the top, of the chain of command, that we will ensure that Rivers delivers. Signed, Bradford and McDonald, Commanding Officer.
Well, that is terrific. I really appreciate you sharing. That last statement about the core values really brings into the forefront that we are a team. One person alone is not going to be successful. And I think in business, it's the same thing. If you're in sales, you might be the point of the spear, but if you don't have the shaft of the spear, you're not going to be successful. And recognizing that no one person has a higher position or priority, but we work as a team. We protect one another as a team, and we respect one another. In the application, we want to talk about building our own leadership compass. Give us the lead into that.
Well, I thought in the Navy that having a command policy was very handy because, as you said, great parallel, it's an upfront contract with the crew. And I thought, why shouldn't business owners, business leaders have their own leadership philosophy? And I don't think you need to be the owner of a Fortune 500 company to do this. I think you can be the general manager of two people. People ought to know what your leadership philosophy is. And when we take a pen to paper and attempt to write down our own leadership philosophy, a lot of things happen. One is we do some good introspection and start to figure out what we believe about leadership. And then if we give it to our people, it helps create a better relationship where they understand what's expected of them and what they can expect of you.
Give your contact information, Brad, in case somebody listening to us would like to reach out to you.
McDonald@Sandler.com, McDonald at Sandler.com, SANDLER.com.
And I'm Jim Stevens, the host of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm available at area code 208-429-9275, or you can reach us on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. The next segment of our program is called Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to interview local and regional entrepreneurs. They tell their story about what worked and didn't work in the development of their organization. Where are they seeing their future and how are they going to get there? And through this process, we get to learn vicariously through other people's experience. If you or anyone you know would be a good candidate for this program, please reach out to me. That number once again is area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
I started with Sandler about 3 months ago now. Since being here, we've doubled the revenue that we've been generating. 10 times pay for itself easily already. So I'm excited for the road ahead and highly recommend this training to anyone who's looking to generate new business sales and be successful.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome back to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local, regional, and in this case, national businesses. I've got a client of mine. Michael McDougall is here with us today. Michael, we've been talking about Tower Power, your company, which can be viewed online, www.towerpowergroup.com. They got a great video. What your company does is provide maintenance coats to these big steel towers that we see supporting electrical, maybe even antennas, that type of thing. Talk to us a little bit about that industry in general. Seems like you've got quite a little niche within a much larger industry.
You're absolutely right. And we do apply protective coatings as an active corrosion mitigation for utilities and support structures for power transmission. As long as there's towers and substations around the world, regardless of the environment, galvanized protection that goes on the steel will ablate over time. This has created a big problem, as electricity was only invented X long ago.
Yeah.
As we generated that from the dam sites, hydroelectrically or nuclear, we had to get that power from point A to point B, B being your house,
yeah,
and A being the hydroelectric dam or the nuclear facility. So, and the only real way of doing that until they come up with a better way is towers or
cables.
Poles.
Yeah, you gotta have a cable carrying the conduit.
That's right. And now, when you take a look at this internationally, countries that are more prone to galvanic attack, for example, in New Zealand would be one. Some of the areas, the shorelines of Australia, Japan, India,
West Coast, East Coast, United States. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, so there's a huge problem here. It's an epidemic proportion right now, and it's just scratching the surface.
Yeah, we stayed recently. We went to the Oregon coast, stayed in a hotel that was right on the ocean. It was amazing. The hotel was not more than 10 years old, but hinges, doorknobs. Mm. I mean, you could see open and visible signs of corrosion of anything metallic. And so I'm guessing these big superstructures, as they degrade, they lose their structural strength?
They do. Material loss is the first thing to happen once that protective coating has failed, whether it's hot dip galvanizing or it's a painted surface. As soon as that ablates down to the point where it's no longer doing its job and exposes the substrate, that substrate starts to fail.
People call you because they know they have a problem, or do you have to go find them?
A lot of people out there don't understand they have a problem, and the only time they do is when the problem becomes a real problem and it fails. And we've noticed this in bridges, and a lot of bridges in America right now are failing.
Mm-hmm.
The United States government, roads infrastructure, has now dedicated a massive amounts of money, $5 billion, $6 billion, into repair and refurbishment of a lot of bridges. They're now noticing and coming to grip that, hey, we've got a problem with our utility infrastructure as well. It's time to start doing something about this.
And I think in the case of the bridges, they've waited too long. There's no corrective maintenance that can occur. They're going to have to tear it down and replace it. Is it a different story with towers?
No, a very similar story. And those people who act proactively right now in this arena are the ones that will succeed.
And so you're able to come in with your crews. Sandblast to get it down to raw metal?
In some cases, you have to. Where wet abrasive blasting or sandblasting has to be done in order to get a proper surface profile to apply a product that's going to protect that steel. So yes, we do have to do that. A lot of cases now where we address the problem to a potential client, we can get away from doing that secondary preparation like blasting and wet abrasive blasting, so that we can apply just a single coat of product on a tower and give it that 20-25 years of extra service life.
If you catch it early enough.
If you catch it early enough, exactly. Yeah.
We'll give you contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out and visit with you a little bit more about this protective coating you do.
Sure, Jim. Yeah, Michael McDougall at 604-454-4683, and our website's www.towerpowergroup.com.
Thank you, Michael. And we're going to be back with the final segment of Michael just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour.
I didn't expect the result to be as quick as they were. I've done programs where I've had quick results, but then I get bored with it. The difference with Sandler is I've stayed with it, and over the course of a year, I've continued to build on those results, and it's new stuff every time that I'm learning and applying. My business, there's a marked increase that everybody in my company has noticed and comes and says, what's going on? What are you doing?
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. Each week we bring you entrepreneurs from the region and the area who have made a difference in our community. I'm honored to have with me today Dennis Johnson. He's the CEO of United Heritage Insurance. Dennis, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jim.
If you're in Boise, you drive past United Heritage. You see the building, but you may not know what is United Heritage Insurance.
Yes, thank you. I get asked that all the time. What do you do there? And we put this building here on purpose. We built it in 2001, the first building. It is the one that I wasn't smart enough to put it at an angle, but my executive vice president, Jack Windrow, was, so that you could see our signage from both sides on the freeway. At the time, there were about 60,000 cars going up and down I-84 between Nampa and Boise at that time, and now they tell me there are well over 100,000, about 120,000, 130,000 cars a day. And so it's been a great billboard for us. But the question what we do there always gets asked. It is a holding company that owns insurance companies, so we're in the insurance business. But we're not like an insurance company that you think of on a stock exchange that's owned by shareholders. We are owned by our policyholders. So think of us like we're a mutual company. Think of us like a co-op or like a credit union. And we are a company that is here in a lot of ways for the people, by the people, and of the people. We have four insurance companies, a life company that does business in most of the United States, and three property and casualty companies do mainly homeowners and auto insurance in the western part of the United States.
So how many employees do you have?
At our campus here, Meridian, Idaho, we have about 140. Between our small companies that are located, one outside of Salem, Oregon, and Sublimity, Oregon, and Merced, California, and Atwater, we have about 60 more there. So about 200 employees, but we have about 2,000 agents in the United States. And so we make a distinction partly because of how they get paid with benefits and salary for those who are employees. And then the agents are commissioned agents. They're independent agents.
One of the things, Dennis, that I was so impressed with in the build out of our area here is the attention to detail, especially when it comes to technology. I mean, if you drive by, you see the solar panels on the roof. We just recently have put in charging stations for electric cars. Talk to us about that concept or core value of your company.
Well, we really think technology is key to the insurance business and to our ability to service our customers. So when we built the building originally, we're one of the first buildings here in the area to have high-speed fiber optic cable, not just to the company, to the building, but we put it to every workstation because time is money and waiting for your computer terminal to answer you, that extra nanosecond costs us money and wastes your time as a customer when you're talking to customer service. So we did that, and then in addition to that, we are really attuned to technology. Today, you'll see the solar panels on the building that we're in right here. It provides about 20% of the electricity for this building. Here in Idaho, we're allowed to reverse meter, and so if we have more power that we're generating than we need in the building, it actually goes back into the power grid. In addition to that, now we put in electric charging stations for electric vehicles or electric plug-in hybrid vehicles.
So why is that such a priority for United Heritage Insurance?
This year, let me just talk about a focus we have this year, but it really is part of an ethos of this company, and that is that technology and insurance and the delivery of these products really is related to technology. For us this year, we have a theme, which is sustainability, insurance, and technology, and the combination of the three. So let me give you an idea. For example, you mentioned electric vehicle charging stations. We have done that because, for example, we generate the electricity off of the solar panels. We put that back into the grid, or we have inverters that bring it into this building. It goes back into the grid into our parking stalls. Then we can put that into the cars, either electric vehicles or plug-in hybrids. The next part of that is what is happening in the auto industry and auto insurance when we start talking about autonomous cars, and that's when the technology and insurance piece come together. And so we are exploring, and we think we're at the forefront of talking about autonomous vehicles and what does this all mean for the future.
Well, I would say definitely in the forefront. I don't know that it's, and perhaps it is, but it doesn't seem to me very common for somebody to be, an organization to be looking that far ahead and really not only trying to predict the future, but be prepared for it.
We know that we have to develop insurance policies for that future, so we think that the future is going to be different. Today, you buy an auto policy. It covers the auto that you're driving, the auto that you own, or the auto that you lease. We could think in the future that what you're going to buy from us is a transportation policy. We're going to cover the car that you get into that Uber came up to your front door, or the autonomous car, or the Google car, or the Lyft car, or the ride sharing that you're going to do, or the airplane that you're going to get in, or the train that you're going to ride in. It's going to be a transportation policy. It's not just going to be an auto policy for a specific car.
Wow, that is brilliant. Who would have thought of that? Is that, how do you come up with this?
I will tell you that this is the outgrowth of some recent meetings that we've had with our management, and it was the idea of one of our company presidents from Oregon. He said, you know, he said, I think where we're heading is this transportation policy.
Wow.
So Andy Trower from Oregon is the guy who came up with this idea.
Brilliant.
And we think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I do too. So, Dennis, insurance is one of those things that we all have to have or should have. Sometimes when you're making those payments, you don't really perceive the value. So talk about the value that's delivered by having the security of an insurance policy.
We think it's very important for our employees to understand that value and also the significance of their work and their life's work. Recently, we celebrated significant events for our employees for their longevity, 40 years, 35 years, 25 years, on the fives. We celebrate. For example, we just did have a lady who has been with us 40 years, and I think she'll be with us some years to come. It is important that her life's work be significant, and so we think in terms of the claims that we've paid. And I need to tell you, we're not perfect. We do our very best. We cover covered claims. Our companies have been in business, all of them, for about 100 years. The life company just 80, the others over 100. But over a 40-year career, this individual will have been involved in many claims. Just for example, last year, 2015, we paid $77 million in claims to 12,998 individuals. We think that's significant, and we think that that is something that an individual can think in terms of the work they do, whether they're a computer programmer or what they do at the company, that their life has significance.
You know, one of my businesses is Stronghold Remodeling, and as a remodeling contractor, I have done a fair bit of insurance work. When somebody has a problem, they are devastated. If they've had a flood, a fire, everything in their life is in turmoil. To be able to have a policy to fall back on is really something else.
Well, we think as a small insurance entity that we're able to really help our policyholders when they have legitimate claims to be paid. And so take a flood, for example. And by the way, we pay more in flood damage than we do in fire damage. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
And if your house burns down to the ground, that is one of the most significant things that will ever happen in your lifetime. And on those covered claims, we will be right there. We will help the individual. We help them rebuild their house. We help them with their living expenses and get through that crisis. And we really want to be there to help the individual all the way from beginning to end. The same thing with water damage. Think about water event that happens, a toilet that starts leaking on the second floor of a house, and you're gone for 2 weeks on vacation. You come back to quite an absolute mess. And on those covered claims, we are there, and we want to help, and we get you through that process, through those real disasters. And we help the individual in terms of replacing the damaged part of their house, their contents that needed to be replaced that are covered, and then also getting them through the temporary housing part of that.
You mentioned covered claims, and I think we realize we weren't adequately covered when it's too late, right? So what is some of the advice you would give to anyone out there who has an insurance policy that they either haven't read or they're not clear on their coverage?
Well, it's so important to have an annual review of your coverage, especially in the property and casualty arena where individuals are buying new items, selling items, getting rid of items, what's covered in their house, or they have particularly valuable items that need to be covered separately, that need to be listed as separately covered items. Artwork or jewelry, that would be a good example of that type of coverage. And so it's really important to have, I would say, an annual review, or if you acquire, obviously you acquire new vehicles, you sell a vehicle, you need to let your agent know that immediately. But also when you acquire something extraordinary, you need to make sure that that item is covered so that you are covered. And then in the life insurance arena, we need to make sure when significant events happen in our lives that we provide coverage. Marriages are a good example. Children being born, significant promotions and work, that is your income being higher so that you're protecting that income in the case of a death of a household earner.
Is there some recommendation that you each household have an inventory? You mentioned artwork. I don't think I've got I've got some great artwork, and I don't think I've got that listed. Should I be going through my home and inventorying some of the stuff I have?
You know, I think it's a great idea to do that. My wife and I, through our daughter who's a realtor, were introduced to a gentleman who comes to your house and who will do a video inventory of your home.
Wow.
And we did that. We had them come and take a video inventory, and there were a few items that needed to be covered or to be listed separately on our homeowner's policy, but it really is helpful to do that and then to update that every once in a while. And let me just say to keep a copy of that video outside of your house, maybe in your office, somewhere else, just in case something happens to your house.
That is a great point. Back to the point of life insurance, I think we may underestimate the coverage we should have. So what's the rule of thumb? If you're going to get life insurance, you want to make sure you leave your family with no debt. What else should you think
about? You know, it's helpful to think of no debt. It's helpful to think of children who may be going to college in the future. I mean, typically life insurance professionals will tell you you must have 6 to 10 times your annual income in life insurance protection. That's just a rule of thumb.
Good.
And that's going to vary by individuals, but that gives you some idea. So I like to tell young people, for example, a young person that I'll call young because I'm a little older than this, but a young person, 40. Let's say a breadwinner in a household that's 40 is a middle-income household. I will tell them you should have at least $1 million of life insurance. And I know that varies now by, say, you may have a high-income person that's way too little, or somebody who just doesn't make any money and they can't afford that. They should be thinking at least of $1 million, maybe $1 million if they can't afford permanent insurance, certainly term insurance to cover the short-term need in case something happens.
And really, the cost, if you're in decent health, the cost is minimal compared to the value of it should you ever need it, and we hope we don't.
Well, you make a good point. You know, the younger you are, it's a good time to buy it because the cost is lower, and also the healthier you are, it is going to help you in terms of that cost. There are some individuals, because of the health incidences, that won't be able to get coverage, but most people can. And even if they have some health condition, they may get rated, they may have to pay a little extra for it, but it's still worth doing.
Well, Dennis, wonderful having you as a guest today. And I'm thinking there's probably a listener or two that is thinking, I'd like to look into maybe reviewing my policy or finding out about how I'd go about getting coverage from United Heritage. Give your contact information.
Sure. You know, one of the easiest ways is just to go to our website, unitedheritage.com. Our local number here in Idaho is 208-493-6100. We have a toll-free number. You can call us from anywhere in the United States, 800-657-6351. The email is heritage@unitedheritage.com. And all of our companies can be reached on their Facebook pages, so it's pretty easy to find us.
So, fantastic. Dennis, thanks for being on the program today. And listeners, we're going to be back for the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this.
I have faith in the Sandler system. When you tell me things, sometimes it seems counter to what my instincts would tell me to do, but I go out there, I try it, and it works. Whatever you tell me, I'm going to keep going out there and putting it to you. This is something that's very, very different than any course that I've taken, and the results are going to be different as well. Firsthand, I would put my stamp on it. You will see results from this. I would do it.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome back to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local, regional, and international businesses. Michael McDougall is my client and friend who is here visiting us in Boise, Idaho. I coerced him to get on the radio program with me, and I've noticed this is a man that travels the continent. How many hours do you log a year? Flight miles.
Should we go there?
A million, I'm guessing.
I know it's over a million kilometers. I don't know. I'd have to do the math on miles, but it's pretty close. It's a fair trek. Yeah.
How do you sustain the mental agility, the physical energy, the stamina needed to work in multiple time zones? I mean, I go east for a training, and just that alone can be exhausting. How do you do it?
Well, I guess the first step is stay away from fast food.
Oh, really? Good idea.
It's a smart thing. And listen, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and you have to identify where your weakest link is, I think, on a regular basis. I wake up in the morning, Jim, and I have a daily regime, more of a reprieve, call it as you will.
Yeah.
And I have to make sure that not only am I mentally fit, I have to make sure my body's in good shape. And there's certain a spiritual aspect as well that I introduce into my life. So I've got these three areas of my life that I got to keep in check all the time. And if I'm able to do that, then it makes the rest of the day go that much smoother.
So the body, I think we can all figure out. You got to devote some time to exercising and be consistent there. You mentioned fast food. Body is not just being physically fit, but it's making sure you're getting the right fuel. Any thoughts or suggestions there?
Well, that's it. I mean, you got to take a look at your diet, and that's one of the areas of fatigue that I was able to identify with was when I'm not eating properly. My mornings start out, they've got supplements out there and greens and vitamins, whatever you need, you feel that's necessary for that, or just eating a good, healthy, balanced meal in the morning and start with some good exercise, do some good reading in the morning to get your head in shape and get yourself mentally fit for that. Everything complements each other as the day goes through.
So how do I get myself mentally fit?
Well, I guess that sort of depends on who you are and what you're doing. I have to talk to a lot of people on a regular basis, so I like to be able to hear what people are talking about. I'm a big believer if I'm the smartest guy in the room, I'm in the wrong room. Simple as that.
Good point.
And therefore, I'm reading a lot of and hearing and listening to a lot of self-help publications and audiobooks. I'm a big believer in motivational speakers, be it business, spiritual, exercise.
What kind of things do you do to feed your spirit?
By all means, when I see a spiritual spiritual. I'm not going to lean more to religious. It might scare a couple people off. I'm per se not a Bible thumper per se, mm-hmm. but I believe, and I can't be the only director of my own show if I'm just an actor.
Yeah.
I can't be the grip. I can't be the director. I can't be the lighting guy. So I have to put in place what happens in that day and the power of something bigger than what I am, whether yeah. it's the universe or whether you call it karma or higher power or whatever the case may be. And I have to get my mind spiritually set and my body and my soul ready that things will happen and it's okay.
Yeah.
And when I'm in that place of mind, everything else seems to go a lot better. And that's how I like to be able to keep myself spiritually fit. It's funny, you know, when that happens, all of a sudden I'm mentally fit and my body's in great shape too.
So it's keeping my mind, my body, and my spirit all at maximum. How do you do it with the sustaining pace that you have of travel?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I just got off the, I got a little FaceTime in from my daughter there over in New Zealand, and I just spent 10 minutes with her, and I like to do that as often as I can.
Good.
That gets me in a good shape. That gets my, you know, my optimism and my positivity. It just, I feel it radiating from her. I love bringing that into me. Like I say, with the physical exercise, I like to read a couple of books a month if I can. I don't always do that. If I can't read them, I listen to the audio tapes, and I listen to motivational speakers on a regular basis, the TED Talks, that type of thing. Yeah. Just to get my head a little checkup from the neck up, call it as you will.
Awesome, awesome. Give your contact information in case there's somebody who'd like to reach out to you, Mike.
Sure, Jim. It's Michael McDougall, 604-454-4683. That's a 24/7 phone, by the way, and it's globally, time zones included. See us at www.towerpowergroup.com.
Going to be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. I'm Jim Stevens, your host, available at 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.
Everything you teach is centered around not doing what the customer expects, that dance that you do back and forth that I was stuck doing and didn't like my job when I was having to do that. And changed my actual job description and the way that I interact with clients so much so that now I feel very proud of what I do, and I love going to work, and I don't feel like I'm getting caught in that dance anymore. I'm able to actually talk to people, and they forget I'm a salesperson because of these techniques. They end up selling it themselves, and I feel like I'm not even selling.
And welcome back to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. We've been talking with Brad McDonald, submarine captain for how many years, Brad?
Well, I was in the submarine force for about 20 years, and I had the honor and privilege of being a commanding officer for the last three of those years.
Well, thank you for your service. And he moved from being a submariner to becoming a salesperson, and through that journey discovered Sandler Training. Brad spent 15 years as a Sandler trainer and is now functioning as a coach for our home office. He really provides leadership and mentoring for all of the Sandler trainers worldwide. Brad talked a little bit about what are some of the command policies required to establish the foundation for success. What are the 7 leadership principles that could guide and define? In my mind, Brad, when I hear leadership principles, I think of this really is the rudder that guides me to the future that I want.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. One of the things that I did was thought about having that command policy on the ship and thought, why not have one in the business world? I think it's a good exercise for people to go through. They can do it by themselves or with other people or in a class. A leadership philosophy can be whatever the writer or creator wants it to be. And one suggestion, when I work with leaders one-on-one to develop their leadership philosophy, I send them to the whiteboard, Jim, with a marker, and I make them draw a wheel with 7 spokes. And those 7 spokes, I have them label as values, leadership principles, expectations, non-negotiables, priorities, idiosyncrasies, and commitment. So values would be what that person holds important. And leadership principles would be, here's the sort of behaviors that I expect myself to engage in, and here's what I'd like to see out of you. Expectations, what I expect of you and what you can expect from me. Non-negotiables could be, these are things that are absolutes in our office that we either will do or we will not do. Priorities, what's important to me? It's helpful if the people that report to you know what's important. Idiosyncrasies, what are your hot buttons? Like Mad Dog and his command policy, one of the other things I remember was he said, for the supply officer, I do not like new unlaundered towels. And I thought, what in the world does that mean? Well, that was his idiosyncrasy. He wanted to make sure a towel was washed and softened up before it was given to him. I thought that was kind of silly, but that was his idiosyncrasy. And then commitments. You know, what's my commitment to you? So I wrote my own leadership philosophy, and I just started it out with my own life purpose. So it says, purpose gives meaning to life. My life purpose is to transform lives for a better world and give back. I will accomplish my life purpose by investing my values of faithfulness, reliability, compassion, charity, and lifetime learning, and my God-given talents of writing, speaking, teaching, training, selling, and mentoring into the improvement of other people. I help people improve their business skills and achieve greater success in their professional and personal lives. I also help disadvantaged children in my own city achieve greater academic success and a higher sense of self-worth. So I think by starting off something, Jim, with your own purpose, it helps people know you a little better, and that's the real idea here after you write this thing. And that's how it opens. Second thing is it has what leadership means to me. An excellent leader is a person who inspires and influences people to do their best for a common cause, a mission, a purpose, or a group endeavor. John Adams said, if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. That's the leader I work to be. Notice nowhere in here do I promise people that every single day, Jim, am I going to live up to every one of these things.
If you think of this as a leadership compass, the function that a compass serves is to make sure we're going in the right direction. When you really need a compass is when you're under pressure, when you get lost, when you've lost your bearings, when there's so much fog. A lot of folks out here in Idaho are hunters. I've been lost hunting many times, and boy, if I hadn't had a compass, I would have panicked and could have been lost for days on end. So really what you're outlining for us is that compass that helps us when we're under pressure remember our bearing.
So the next part of my compass is my operating principles or leadership principles, and there's seven of them. And they are, one, I will be approachable and in control of myself. One of my watchwords is calmness of mind. You can bring me bad news and know I will react calmly. The reason I have that is I observed in my time in the Navy that if people thought they were going to get yelled at for bringing bad news to the boss, they would stop bringing the bad news. When your people stop telling you bad things, you're really in trouble. Second principle, I will be consistent. Third principle, I will be fair and just. Four, I will set the standard. I won't expect you to have sharper looking uniform, better haircut, or treat our clients better than that which you see from me. Leaders always have to know that they cannot expect the people below them to set a higher standard than that which they see from their leader. Number five, I will continuously supply energy and enthusiasm for whatever is to be done. I will be the most excited person in the business, prospecting time, cleaning up the office, those kind of things. I'm guessing even in your business, Jim, there's probably something you don't like doing, probably something your team doesn't like doing. But I would say if they see you having a bad attitude about it, how's their attitude going to be? That was number five. Number six is I will be myself, but I will always be the CEO. Or whatever your role is. The reason I have that is I think a lot of times, Jim, you guys like you and me in the Santa world, we look at great people up on stage and we think, I gotta be like Joe. I gotta be like Fred. I gotta be like Sally. They're real successful. And I think we always have to remember that it's important to be yourself. Don't forget the role that you're in. Your role is CEO. Remember your role. People prefer you to stay in your role and be the CEO to them. They don't need you to be their best friend. It's important to remember our role.
Good.
And the last principle is I will always attempt to make you proud that I am your leader. So those are my seven operating or leadership principles.
The concept here is for us to develop our own, not necessarily adopt yours, but how do I figure out what are my top seven principles? Any suggestions there?
I'm a believer in start writing things, and things come out when you start writing. If you're having brain block or mind block, I'm just one of those guys that believes when you put pen to paper and start writing that things tend to come out. And I agree with you. Don't try to adopt mine. These days it's so easy to go on the internet and look at great leaders and the kind of things they said, get ideas there. But I think you just say, what's important? What is important to me about business? How do I want people to behave and how do I want them to conduct themselves? Well, that's what I need to expect out of myself. So leadership principles are more about you and how you lead.
So the next
paragraph is expectations. Says your worth to this business. Once again, keep in mind, I wrote this in terms of being an owner of a Sandler business, just like your worth to this business and to me is based on two vital traits, integrity and professionalism. If you're an honest man or woman, always putting forth your best effort for yourself and your teammates, you will succeed in our business. Remember, you only have your integrity once. Treasure it, guard it, avoid the short-term gain of dishonesty, and enjoy the long-term satisfaction as being known of a man or woman of your word. John Paul Jones said, men mean more than guns in the raiding of a ship. We have a great business here. It's our job to keep it that way. It's our job to be professional. A positive attitude, a sharp appearance, mental fitness, and an enthusiastic approach to our clients and everything we do are all marks of our professionalism. These qualities will form our reputation as individuals and collectively as the Sandler Training Team in Hampton Roads, Virginia.
I think that's a terrific point that you bring up, Brad. And unfortunately, I'm looking at the clock and we are running out of time. We've covered values. We've covered leadership principles. We've covered expectations. And we're now ready to talk about the non-negotiables. And sadly, having run out of time, happily for me, I have a terrific teaser to make sure people listen next weekend. I'm going to ask Brad to wrap this up in our next segment of the Sandler Training Hour. In the interim, Brad, why don't you give your contact information in case somebody listening would like to reach out to you?
Okay, I appreciate that, Jim. I'm at mcdonald@sandler.com. Email is mcdonald@sandler.com.
And I'm Jim Stevens, your host. I'm available at area code 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Listeners, I'm so grateful that you give part of your weekend to us and join with us. If there's any topic you'd like to hear more information about or if you'd like to reach out to me directly, be honored to take your call. Remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. Have a great weekend. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.